Today we're having a joint meeting, and so the Civil Justice Policy Committee will come to order. And the first item is we have to pass the minutes. So Representative Kelly moves the minutes of the February 11th meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries.
And I call the meeting of the Crime Records and Criminal Records and Crime Victims. Thank you, Patrick. Division to order, and the chair notes the quorum is present for this committee, and our only agenda item is the report from the Criminal and Juvenile Justice Information Policy Group on commercial data mining. So with that, let's proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, Michael Campion is my name. I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety. I'm here to give some very, very brief introductions and a bit of context to the data mining delivery team report. This report was a result of 8 or 9 meetings that took place from January of 2008 through August of 2008 by a delivery team that studied the issue, brought the report to the full task force, the Criminal Task Force, and then which forwarded that report on to the policy group. The policy group and the task force could not come to a consensus on the approach to this very complicated and multifaceted issue. As a result of that, we created some principles with which the policy group would suggest that the legislature look at if the legislature has an interest in moving in the direction of some policy as a result of data mining and the issues surrounding it. So with that, Doug Johnson, the Washington County Attorney, is here at the table with me. He was the chair of the delivery team that as I said, 8 or 9 meetings, I believe, looking at this issue.
Just before you start, I want to explain a little so that I'm not sure everybody understood what the commissioner said. The task force had a delivery team, which we would probably consider a subcommittee or something like that, so that you understand what happened. Then that was brought to the task force. They didn't agree on things. Then the policy group, which is over that, established, my understanding, Commissioner, you're on that, established these principles that are on this two-page letter. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes.
And so then what we're getting is really the subcommittee's report, and my understanding is that, at least from some of the people that were on the task force, is that there will probably be bills for particular things in here that most didn't disagree with substantially, but that's kind of a layout of what's going on. Go ahead, Mr. Johnson, state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Doug Johnson. I'm the Washington County Attorney. I am a member of the CrimNet Task Force, and I was the chair of the delivery team looking at commercial data mining of criminal justice system records. The reason I agreed to be the chair is that I had no agenda. I wasn't sure there was a problem, or if there was a problem, what the solution would be. We met 9 times from February to August. We took input from members, staff, and interested parties. The one conclusion I came to is that it's a very complicated issue with no black or white answer as to a solution. And I see 4 problems in this area when we're dealing with data mining or data harvesting. Now, perhaps what I should do is first of all explain what we're talking about. There are companies that will approach both law enforcement and the court system for people's records. They will then sell that information for background searches, for credit, for jobs, and for housing. There are 4 major problems with the data harvesting. First of all, information changes very quickly. You can be going home tonight, your vehicle stopped, you get a ticket, or perhaps you're arrested, be placed in jail for some reason. The reports go to the prosecutor, and perhaps there is no prosecution that's done. But you still have been picked up, and there is criminal justice information that's been created, and that can go on the internet. Second problem I see is that when it gets on the internet, it's there forever. And it may change and be updated, or it may not be. But it can't be taken back. Third problem I saw was that the data miners, many of them, are out of the jurisdiction of the state of Minnesota, and many are even out of the jurisdiction of the United States government. The federal government has tried to create solutions called the Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act, FRCA, FCRA. The problem is that not all data miners are subject to FCRA. In fact, I have a website where they actually say right on their website, we are not subject to FCRA. So the purpose of this report was to explain 8 different approaches to how we might handle the problem. Some being done by other states, and some are unique. Our report states the arguments both for and against each approach, that there was input from the delivery team members, from the staff, and from interested parties. And what we attempted to do was let everybody have a say as to what they thought was A, the problem, and B, the solution. We decided not to come to a solution or a proposal. There was really no consensus among us as to what the answer is. And second, there are many different approaches, and as our feeling, it's the policy makers that have to decide what the state of Minnesota wants to do. Philosophically, I have a problem with a small group of people deciding what the policy should be, and it gets passed up, and then it's simply adopted. So what we tried to do is give you a number of options. Perhaps not the best way, it's certainly not the easiest for you, but you certainly have a smorgasbord of choices. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to explain what the 8 choices are, or approaches that we took. I'm not going to go into the pros and cons, and I'm not going to discuss other state approaches. All of that is in the report, and you have no need for me to read that to you. The first solution we proposed, or discussed, was limiting the information available and removing outdated records. Most criminal justice data, at least in the executive branch, is classified as public under Chapter 13. We could require the executive branch, that is, prosecutors and law enforcement, probation office, to reclassify old data on minor matters as either private, which means they would be subject to it would be available to the subject of the data, or confidential, in which case no one can get it. We talked about regulating data miners. The first way is the data refresh approach, and that requires data miners to obtain and use the most up-to-date government data available. And in the 2008 legislature, under Chapter 315, you did pass so that it's requiring monthly updates beginning in July of 2009. Another thing we considered was the pros and cons of actually imposing no regulation on data mining entities and allowing the market to self-regulate. And that is, in fact, our present system. Another way is to certify and train commercial users. sanction for not taking any training and having a certification would be the state could refuse to let those people receive future data. And under regulation of data mining, you could also allow criminal justice system records to be disseminated only with informed consent from data subjects. We have in Minnesota the Fair Information Practices Principles to the Private. That right now is dealing with the governmental sectors. You could apply that to the private sector. These principles provide policies to guide the use of government-held data. Users of criminal justice system data could be required to provide data subjects with notice and an opportunity to correct the record. We could improve the accuracy of records. Uniform data entry standards and definitions would increase the accuracy and understandability of the records. I know when I get a report of somebody's criminal record, it's long, it's confusing, and we really wonder what's going on. Usually I have to ask a secretary what it all means. The other problem we have right now is that the judicial system, or system now has NMSIS, but the executive branch does not. And so it would be nice to have one standard for all of these records.
Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, again, I had a question related to it, and I didn't know if you were going to cover this later on, but in the options that you just went over and passed by, there was the one option of certifying and training the commercial users. Did the group look at all at the tendencies of commercial providers and whether or not they would easily ignore training if the market demands of that data were lucrative enough for people to include all kinds of, say, illegitimate records or arrest records that subsequently didn't result in the fruition of prosecution?
We did not look at that issue as to whether or not they would be following the training and certification. We did anticipate that if they did not, we would then withhold the information from them, and we felt that was the only way we were going to be able to police them, especially considering the fact that many of these people are from out of state.
Okay, thank you.
We looked at limiting the uses of the data and to provide remedies. It's the COIL approach, the Minnesota Criminal Offender Rehabilitation Act. Right now, that limits government's ability to use criminal records to influence hiring practices. When I hire somebody, I always check to see if they have a criminal record, and then in some cases, I would be prohibited from using that criminal record in making my hiring decision. It's pretty limited for prosecutors, police officers, probation officers, that sort of thing, but on the other hand, we've got somebody who's going to be coming into work, let's say in the recorder's office, the recorder's office would be much more limited as to the use that they could put that criminal record to when declining hiring that person. This could be done to expand employment and housing in the private sector. In other words, we simply say that there are certain type of criminal offenses, maybe you date it. If you got a criminal record that you're off probation for 5 years, you've had no further criminal behavior, landlords and employers could not use that as a reason not to hire. There's always the issue of burden of proof. Does the employer have to prove they didn't use it? Does the employee have to prove they did use it? You've always got that problem. But it would be one way to say, here's how we can fix it, or attempt to fix the problem. We we could restrict the dissemination of non-conviction records. Many, many people do not understand what the difference is between being arrested, being charged, and being convicted of a crime. We could classify the name and other identifying information private until either charges are filed or a conviction is obtained. Now that's really out there when you consider that if we were to charge somebody with murder and you couldn't give the person's name to the public until after they were convicted, it's going to make a lot of people unhappy. But it's one thing we looked at. You could authorize the Attorney General to enforce law affecting data mining process. The federal law, FCRA, allows for this, and this would allow the Attorney General to enforce any state laws with the which you might pass in the future. You could also give data subjects the ability to sue data miners, including the recovery of attorney's fees, and it would put the enforcement on the new laws on those who have actually been injured. There is definitely a lack of understanding about laws affecting data mining by data subjects, lawyers, and the general public. Robert Tennyson was kind enough to bring a person in from Washington, D.C. to explain to us, half of whom were lawyers, exactly what FCRA was all about. As a practitioner up in Wadena in a small office, I can tell you I had never heard of it. And I suspect that most attorneys have not, and many would not have any idea what recourse there is on the credit side in this area. So, one of the things you could do is create a state agency to educate the public on both state and federal laws involving criminal justice. By the way, if it isn't obvious, it should be. We weren't really looking at the political chances of some of this stuff passing, but we just felt we had to put it out there. Perhaps a survey of data subjects to determine how best to educate subjects about their rights, and we were thinking of perhaps having a survey done at BCA where people come in and ask to have their criminal records checked. We could give, or you could give data subjects the right to access data mining records. This would give the subjects the ability to ensure the records are accurate and to correct them. We did talk about sealing and expunging records. One thing would be to adopt the recommendations of the policy group's recommendations contained in the 2008 background check and expungement report, and also to allow the court to seal minor or old irrelevant records. Now, again, I would remind you that we have two systems here. One is the judicial, who run their own records, and then we have the executive branch, which is governed by the rules that the legislature makes. So it would be nice to have everybody on the same track. You could charge fees for each record, which would allow the government to finance the regulation of data mining. I know that money is tough right now. Some of the things that we've talked about would cost money. Charging fees might be a way to pay for it. That is our report. Are there any questions?
Oh, I have a question, Mr. Johnson.
Yes.
On page 22, you talked about the possibility of authorizing the Attorney General to enforce the law. Was there a member from the AG's office in your group? And if so, what was their opinion of that?
There was not a member on our group.
Are there any other questions from members of the, either of the committees? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, we do... Representative Paymar.
I just didn't know who was... Is there... Does it show in the document who was part of this working group?
You know, I think we tried to stay anonymous.
Clever.
But with all due respect, I can get you that information.
I'd like to see it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there another question, Commissioner Campion? Did you have any follow-up?
I have no follow-up, Mr.
Okay,
no.
Thank you very much for your testimony. There are individuals who would like to testify in this. I know Mr. Tennyson expressed a desire to testify. Why don't you take a seat? Representative Mulley.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Johnson, could you tell me, there was a pretty strong minority report, but apparently only one person, is that correct? And what was the, can you, in a few sentences, tell me the gist of his minority report?
Mr. Johnson.
There was one minority report, and it's been so long since I read it, I'm sorry, I can't summarize it.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Tennyson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Tennyson. I'm an attorney in Minneapolis. I represent Reed Elsevier, which owns LexisNexis and ChoicePoint and a few other companies. By way of background, I've been involved in this issue for a long time. It's a very complex issue, as many of you well know who've been involved in it. Our concern with this report is that it oversimplifies something. A couple of years ago, the legislature began considering an act, which was part of the Privacy Act last year, considering data mining. It assumes that credit reports, credit information, background information is all the same. My clients are credit reporting companies, among other things. Under that, they're covered by the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the federal act, and they're required to comply with that. There's no secrets about that. That requires and imposes upon our clients the duty to be accurate, to have complete information, and to correct information. For example, if somebody thinks their report is inaccurate, all they have to do is notify us, and we're required by law to reinvestigate the issue, correct it, refuse to correct it because we think we're accurate, or remove it. And that's done, and there's great penalties for that. The Fair Credit Reporting Act is addressed, and it's over 40 years old now. It's been amended a few times by Congress to improve it. The purpose of it is to make sure that decisions made about people for credit, finance, housing, that sort of thing, insurance, are based upon accurate information, and the person is not disadvantaged by inaccurate information. So they have we have an obligation and duty to do that, and it's enforced by the Federal Trade Commission, and the states are the Attorney Generals of the states are authorized to enforce the law as well. And that's done, and there are severe penalties if you don't do that. Now, we got lumped together with people on the internet. Organizations, you can go on the internet and search people. You can find information from the press, you can find from a lot of sources. We don't operate that way. You can't get our information, you can't get a credit reporting company's information by going on the internet. You have to establish a contractual relationship with them, and you got to pay for it. What triggers the application of the Fair Credit Reporting Act is the charging of a fee. So if you provide this financial information, credit information, information for insurance for a fee, you are covered by the Fair Credit Reporting Act, whether you like it or not, no matter what you call yourself. So you're covered by the Act, and the individuals have these rights under the Fair Credit Reporting Act to examine their records, correct their records, or have it corrected. Also, just so you know that, for employment purposes, before we can run a background check for employment purposes, we have to have written authorization from a prospective employee, or we don't do it. That's law. So it isn't a matter of them not knowing. If you're going through a formal check, not knowing what's on your record, you have a right to know that, and you get that information. Now, what's happened, there's an assumption made a couple of years ago in some reports that are inaccurate, that companies don't care about the accuracy of the information. And that's simply a false premise. It was stated in a report to the legislature 2 years ago, and there was no footnote, no basis for that report. The assumption that we don't care about accuracy, to care less about it, is simply false. We care about the accuracy, otherwise we can't sell our information, also we'd be subject to a lot of penalties. But unfortunately, the delivery team started with that assumption, that information, that we don't care about accuracy. So we tried to sort out this whole thing about what's covered by the Fair Credit Reporting Act and what's not. Now, there's some things that are not covered by the Fair Credit Reporting Act. I said that you have to charge a fee. Okay? An employer who uses our services, you know, we're covered, they're covered, so on. However, an employer, any one of you, can go on the internet if you're prospective hiring somebody and simply do a background check, whatever you find, you got. You're not covered by the Fair Credit Reporting Act in that circumstance. And so if some employer does that, or you do that, you're not covered by the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Another issue that comes up with these reports on the internet, which are not our reports, I mean, there are other companies that do that, and I don't even know who they all are, and I don't expect anybody really does. I'm told that some of them have a block, a check the box. I'm not accessing this information for employment or housing or finance. So therefore, it's not covered. Others may could even charge a fee for that because they're not doing it for that purpose. So the customer is saying, I'm not using it for employment, housing, and finance, that sort of thing, so they're not covered. A second issue that gets raised is when you go on an internet site and you get some background information on somebody, and they don't charge you any money, it doesn't trigger the Fair Credit Reporting Act. The question, though, is open.
Mr. Tennyson, for a moment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Tennyson, you said that the act doesn't apply to if it's not for employment, finance, landlord, etc. But you said if the employer goes on and asks or looks it up and says it's not for that purpose, wouldn't he still be covered if he was using it for that purpose, even though he said in writing he wasn't?
I don't know, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mueller, I don't know the answer to that for sure. I don't know the answer to that. I think the employer who is doing that would be certainly violating the spirit of the law because they're using it for that purpose, and I don't know if they'd be violating the technical part of the law. The other thing I was going to say is that when an internet site markets their product, sometimes they do it through advertising. You know, you don't pay for it, they make the revenue through advertising. So whether that's for a fee or not has never been decided by the court. Now, I really make this distinction as important because the law that was passed last year, which is effective June 30, kind of lumps a lot of things together. First of all, the Fair Credit Reporting Act applies when you make a decision, when somebody is applying for something and there's a decision made about whether they get credit or insurance or housing, that sort of thing. So there's a reason why the Fair Credit Reporting Act applies to those, because they make a decision about people, which affects their housing, finance, so on. And so Congress has crafted a method by which to make sure that that information is fair and accurate. You know, for example, we have to update that information in 30 days. You know, it's got to be current. Now, there are other issues that are not used to make decisions about people. And there's a lot of data out there, including my client has a separate bank of data for locating people. Some of our major customers are government, law enforcement, and other groups. And that is not to make a decision about whether someone gets a benefit or not. That's to locate them. But it's also used for a lot of other purposes, which you have to understand the consequences of or should appreciate, because you may do, you know, that law is going to have some effect that you may not like. For example, you may have a little league team, and you're not screening volunteers for employment, so it's not technically under, it's not under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. But the law may require you to do a background check for a little league team or, you know, Boy Scouts, whatever, to find out whether people applying for volunteer positions are sexual predators. In fact, that screening is routinely done, and there's a lot of people found. Another one recently, I think it was Facebook, one of those programs, where they're screening people, the company screening people, to make sure that the people aren't Jack the Ripper or whoever. So that's not covered by the Fair Credit Reporting Act. But this law that you have may mess that up. There's a lot of uses of data that we haven't searched. I don't understand all the uses of the data that are not covered by the Fair Credit Reporting Act that may have an effect upon...
Just one second. You said the law we have may cover that. Are you talking about present law or a proposal?
No, it's the one that was passed last year as part of the Privacy Act that goes into effect in June. And that can have some adverse consequences. And I don't know what they are. The argument was that the Fair Information Practice Principles, which developed, I want to make sure to make sure you understand, the Fair Information Practice Principles are one thing, the Fair Credit Reporting Act is another. However, the Fair Credit Reporting Act incorporates the Fair Information Practice Principles, which were developed late in the 1960s through the Department of Health and Human Services, federal level. And then they were incorporated in the Privacy Act of 1974 in the federal level. And that federal act also created a Federal Privacy Protection Study Commission in 1975 that was to look at the Fair Information Practice Principles and decide whether they should be applied to the private sector. And that commission was 7 members, and I was fortunate enough to be a member of that commission, appointed by the U.S. Senate. We had a couple million bucks. We had 2 years. We did a serious study of those principles and whether they should apply to the private sector. For example, we looked at banking, insurance, medical records, credit cards, all kinds of things. And what we found was that, in principle, you can argue that they should be applied. The fact is, in how you apply them, in any specific situation, has to be carefully considered because you can have untoward consequences. And so how you implement things varies depending on what it is you're covering. And I don't, you know, the problem I have with this act that was passed that's pending to come into effect is I don't know what the consequences are of it. I can conjure up some, and the problem is nobody here knows either because they haven't been studied. Just assume when it was passed that we should apply these Fair Information Practice Principles across the board and everything would be happy and fine, but I don't think that's the case. Now, I've gone on rather long here, but we submitted a report to the task force and delivery team. It was about a 12-page memorandum. Our concern was, and I gave it to the staff, I don't think you can hand it out, but and if you want, I'd be happy to provide that to you. Our concern with the report, and part of it, besides the substance of it, which I don't think is well done, is that the research is inadequate. We found that the footnotes that are cited don't support what they say they do, and it's cited in our memorandum. Just poor legal work. Also, I would commend David Fenner's minority report, which is attached to it, to you. I think that summarizes pretty much what the issues were. Dave Fenner is a commander in the Ramsey County Sheriff's Department. He would attend all these meetings. So in conclusion, I think a couple of things I'd like you to consider. One is the report's really not adequate. It doesn't address the real problems that exist. It confuses credit reporting companies that comply with the federal law with all other groups that are on the internet. Also, there's a bunch of other issues that I haven't touched on, and that is the access to public records, freedom of speech, freedom of press, and so on, which we could get into if there's some legislation, but it is a complex issue and it takes a long time to work through it. I thought we bored the crap out of you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Tennyson, you said that the Finner minority report was good or something. Can you summarize it?
It's page 31 of the report.
I see it, but I just wondered if you could summarize it in three or four sentences.
Well, initially he says that the issue...
If you see accurate about it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the part.
Could you summarize what you think is important from that you see as accurate?
First of all, he said they didn't identify what the problem is. They couldn't solve the problem, right? The report failed to identify what the issue is, what the problems are, so they couldn't solve the problem. That's he goes into some other issues too, but that's the basic part of it.
One question I noticed right off in the second paragraph, I guess you'd say, he says one must simplify, notify the company of the inaccuracy. Is that correct in your view, or?
Yes,
or not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Maury, under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, if anybody notifies us that they think the report's inaccurate, we have a legal obligation to investigate it and correct it within 30 days, or tell them why we aren't going to correct it, or remove it from the record. In fact, that was the problem with the Fair Credit Reporting Act that Congress tried to fix. People started to game the system. And what they would do is advertise that they could fix your credit, so they get 200-300 people right in and sign up to have their credit changed. And then what they would do is look at the credit reports and write a separate letter on each incident and flood the credit reporting company with 300, 400 letters in one day, and then they had to answer within 30 days, and they probably couldn't do it. So Congress had to deal with that issue. So they were gaming the system. What happened was people couldn't invest. The credit reporting company couldn't correct it. They couldn't reinvestigate. So the only solution was to remove the information from the record, which made it more or less accurate in many cases. So you have to deal with this stuff in a very practical way, because it's serious.
Okay, are there any questions of Mr. Tennyson? Representative Holbert?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Tennyson. If, in fact, a consumer contacts a data miner and they're able to identify inaccurate information, does the data mining company have the duty to go back to those agencies or entities in which they distributed inaccurate information and let them know of the problem?
Mr. Tennyson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, I assume you're talking about the Fair Credit Reporting Act?
Yes.
I don't know the answer to that for sure, but I don't think so.
Representative Holberg?
That's it.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else wants to testify, or Commissioner, did you want to testify again?
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I'm certainly not going to block swords with Mr. Tennyson, but I don't want this committee left with the impression that this whole issue was approached haphazardly. There were 8 or 9 people on the delivery team. There were a cross-section of a criminal justice practitioners from all over the state, multi-disciplines, met for 2 hours at a time, 8 or 9 times. The policy group spent 3 retreat-type settings going over this issue in enormous detail with a wide representation, again, from criminal justice folks and people who came and spoke to us. So this is a very, very complicated issue, but the policy group, the delivery team, and certainly the task force did not take this issue lightly and spent it, and I would tell you that a great deal of time was spent on it. So I don't want this committee left with the impression it was not taken seriously.
Representative Palmer? And Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank the people that worked on it, because it isn't an easy issue area, and I first of all need to commend the commissioner, because I think in the last 5 years, we've seen a whole culture change within law enforcement under his leadership on the importance of how we treat information on individuals, how it's accessed. They're working on changing the whole culture. People have actually been fired for inappropriate access to information, and I know that wasn't easy. That it's a huge thing, and he really committed to making the necessary changes. There were problems, was willing to admit that, and has made great strides, and for that I'm very grateful. But I think what the committee needs to know is that this came out of, in part, a study about background checks. And in the state of Minnesota, the laws governing background checks, what can be considered, who does them, how they're done, is, in my opinion, a total mess, and that there is not, in some instances, much consistency from exposure level. You know, we have McGruff House background checks that the law just says there will be a background check. Doesn't identify who does it, what criteria will be used. So what we have here is we've got two problems kind of butting up against themselves. We have this whole data mining issue and what's available publicly, what's available through government sources, who's accessing, how is it used, what decisions are being made on information, if it's good or accurate or not. And then we as policymakers are so far behind the curve in using the technologies and the information that's available to have some rhyme or reason on this whole background check issue. Should, for purposes of housing, employment, how far back should be able to people look? If you have an arrest but no conviction, is that a criteria to deny you for a particular occupational license, a particular type of employment, a particular housing situation? Can you be a caretaker? And I think that, you know, we've had people on the outside of the legislature spend a lot of time on this issue, but as a legislature, we're not very good at taking these big, huge, we kind of go around the edges of it, and that's what our problem is that we haven't kept up with the technology and the changing times. And so it's not that these guys all just decided to come together and put this report together, but we're hearing from public, we're hearing from people trying to help individuals that have, say, maybe come out of jail and gone through rehabilitation, and they, you know, they're doing really good, but every time they turn around, something that happened a long time ago keeps shutting doors for them, or it's the whole issue of how much information is available out there, and the fact that individuals really don't, in many instances, have a clue why they keep getting shut down over and over and over again. But come to find out, eventually, if they run into the right person that clues them into how the system's working, they might find out that there's bad information about them. So, you know, people think I'm a geek and that I spend a lot of time on this, but I think it has real ramifications in people's lives. It also has ramifications for us as a society as far as how we keep people safe, but still allow those individuals that have made a commitment to turning their lives around and want to be successful and be treated like anybody else that is, after paying their debt to society, if you will, to have their history or their background keep holding them back. I'm going on and on. I apologize for that, but and I think it was reflected in some of the comments that, you know, the group that they don't want to make recommendations is a small little group, but rather they're asking for us as policymakers to begin to try and catch up with where we are in the real world with our policies here at the legislature.
Well, Representative Holbrook, I was at the meeting on Friday for the task force, and there was quite a bit of discussion, the fact that they couldn't come to anywhere near an agreement at the task force level. But I think that what you raise is a problem, probably more of a problem, is on a number of people getting jobs, is the fact that the legislature has not distinguished themselves the difference. If you're convicted of a certain crime, that may not make you unfit to do something else, and yet we've forbidden by law them from being hired in something that there seems to be no logical connection to. So Representative Lush.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would note, as I share a lot of the same concerns as Representative Holberg. For me, though, there is a big difference between those preliminary issues related to the arrest shy of conviction. As a prosecutor, if you've been duly convicted by a jury of your peers, it's a really high standard. I mean, you got to jump through all these hoops, and I know people have come into some of these other committees suggesting that the table is tilted in favor of the state. To the contrary, all the constitutional safeguards are placed in favor of the defendant. So if you get that conviction, I really don't care how long it's on your record. I think the point of a criminal stigma is to ensure that the people in your town or your neighbors actually do know that you were duly convicted by a jury of your peers, utilizing all the constitutional safeguards of due process. The issue for me is primarily those preliminary procedural problems, like arrest, where you have no idea I'm just waving bye to my daughter. Bye, Alice. where we don't have any idea, and that's where people have substantial problems, I think. So I just wanted to make that point.
No more questions or issues? Okay, then. Representative Weston.
Just jumping into this, whether Representative Weston, is arrest information public information? Is that... Or and maybe arrest is. What about an investigation? If somebody's had an allegation made against them, and they investigate and don't even bring charges, is that information? Which
well, it depends. And a lot of the stuff I actually don't know about. I'm willing to bet the Representative Holberg would, but it generally is. However, you can designate non-public data in a police report, for example, a victim or something, in those cases where it's requested non-public. It's supposed to be designated non-public if you make that request. However, oftentimes that gets bypassed because there isn't the proper redactions made.
Representative
Holberg. Well, and to that point, at the time of the arrest at the local location, arrest record is public, and part of the reason that is because you need to know if somebody, if you're looking for somebody, you need to know if they've been arrested. And the other side to that is do we want people arrested and held in jail and nobody can know that that's where they are? I mean, that was the justification for making arrest records public, was that so that people could find out where someone was being held. So, I mean, it's that push-pull of the privacy versus the public need to know. And
but in general, Representative Lush, aren't most files, once the investigation is over and it's no longer an active case, aren't they public?
The answer is yes, Representative Holland, even before that.
Representative Holland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Part of the problem, obviously, is the investigative reports that Mr. Lush refers to. I've seen press, even in rural areas, come in and want to see the investigative reports before anybody's charged, and all of a sudden it's the front page, and they're saying so-and-so has been charged, and I'm scratching my head saying nobody even filed me the paperwork. This is the county attorney in my days. And I never did charge the case, but so-and-so had been charged because there was a report. So yeah, there is some problem there.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay, then I think we're ready to. We'll adjourn Civil Justice first. Civil Justice Committee is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the Division on Crime Victims and Criminal Records is likewise adjourned.